My name is Rod McGinnis. I'm a EMS instructor in Central Florida. I've been in EMS for, I think this year was 20 years, in a bunch of different areas. And I kind of wanted to start by talking about separation a little bit. It's kind of one of my passions. I had a thing happen to me quite a while ago, but I had a call where a five-month-old got died from shaken baby syndrome, basically. And we got this call, and the guy had put the kid in the car to rush it somewhere to get it help, and he got caught by a train. So so he sees a sheriff's deputy there, takes the baby to the sheriff's deputy, and this is 5 o'clock in the morning, the sheriff's deputy didn't quite know what to do, so he just rushes the kid to a fire department. Now it's 5 o'clock in the morning. All those guys are asleep. So they wake up to, hey, here's a dead baby. So we got there. We dealt with the call, did all the stuff we needed to do, and the kid died. And in EMS, you're expected, half an hour after that call is done, you have to be back in service. You have to be back on the road. So you got to do some sort of emotional containment to do that. Mm-hmm. And about 2 days later, my wife called me, my first wife. She had been driving down the road and some rocks had fallen off a car or off a big truck and hit her car. Very upset. Mm-hmm. Now, so when I'm talking to her, one of the things I realized before this is, first of all, if you've built the emotional armor to deal with the first thing, when the second thing comes around, it's really hard for you to get excited about a couple of rocks hitting the roof of somebody's car. But if that other person senses that you don't care about that, they get really upset about that. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to build these like two complete, not personalities, but two complete levels of emotional armor, mm-hmm. so that you can deal with the, dead baby on Tuesday and be back available half an hour later. And then on Thursday when something gets on the carpet and you're supposed to be upset about that, that you can be upset about that, or at least do a good job of pretending you're upset about that. I don't even keep my uniforms in the same place as my regular clothes. If I work, they're in a different closet. You just kind of have to build this weird kind of dual thing. And when I was first in EMS, maybe my first 6 months as a paramedic, I was like sharing all this stuff with family and friends, and it got to be all I was ever talking about was dead people and horrible stuff. And they think they want to hear it, but they really don't. When you get down to when it's okay, it's 6 weeks in, we're still talking about dead guys and bad, that's just not polite conversation.
Right.
So I had to learn to go, okay, we're going to talk about other stuff over here, and the work stuff stays at work. It was an interesting tough transition for me. Cause you're like, you get all the stuff you kind of want to talk about, but you got to be careful who you talk about it with.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about, sort of that leaving work at work, but what sort of the things have you done to be able to vent, or you have a stressful call or something like that, and one of the ways that you can deal with that is want to talk to your family about it and let them know, but you have to talk about maybe finding that balance a little more, sort of like maybe what you encountered.
Yeah, I think the best thing for me was to pick a partner that I could relate to. That became a big thing for me, because anytime you're with a partner, you're stuck in a truck together for I work private EMS, and a lot of it was system status, so you're 4 feet away from the guy,
right,
half your life almost. So if I was with a partner that I could talk to, that I was friends with, where we could deal with that kind of stuff, I did really well. And if I was with a partner who, there are people that you can work with that you don't dislike, but you don't necessarily, you're not buddy buddy, you don't party with each other kind of thing. And that was a lot harder for me because, you know, it's harder to open up to just, you know, the guy sitting across the desk from you and say, hey, man, you know, this was a really tough call. So I kind of became very picky about picking partners. And I've had partners for 6 or 7 years that I would do a lot to keep the partner with the right kind of sort of emotional connection that we could work through that stuff.
So you know, you have a partner you can relate to. Right. Did you ever take advantage of, you know, the critical incident debriefing stuff offered by your agency or
no,
any of that?
Not really. I went to one for a drowning once and another one for something else. I don't remember what it was, but it's just odder for, maybe I'm just more, or some people open up to strangers better than others, but basically for CISD, you're sitting in a room with a bunch of people that you don't really know. And sometimes even worse with people that you do know talking about maybe mistakes you might've made, things like that. It was just not a comfortable situation for me. I would much rather talk about it with people that I know and trust. You know, if you're talking about on a drowning, you know, something went wrong and things go wrong, then I was more comfortable talking with people that I knew.
You also talked about, you said, you know, you kept your clothes in separate places.
I do.
Are there other things that you do to help try to create that that makes that separation easier?
Yeah, I guess so. It's more of a mental thing mostly that, you know, work is work and home is home, and they just don't mix too much. I can't think this second of
a physical thing. What about, you know, what else did you do sort of mentally to separate the two? How long into your career did it take you to find that balance?
I'm not sure I ever did. It's a constant struggle kind of. And one of the dangers is that in order to build that emotional armor that you build up, so much of it that it's really hard for you to relate to your to your wife, to your family, you kind of build this thing that you have to build to survive what you're doing if you're doing, you know, but it makes it a lot harder to do family stuff. It just, their experience is so much different from yours. And the longer you do it, the more alien you are. I had a buddy that was in the army this was before the fall of the Iron Curtain. He was in East Germany and I saw him on a break or something, and he was so frustrated because he'd been through this horrible, interesting, bizarre experience, and he just could not talk to anybody about it because it was so, like, you know, there was just nothing that anybody that hadn't had anything to do with it could grasp. And it's kind of the same thing. It's just, you know, it takes a lot of work to get people to understand what it's like to lose a baby or make a mistake on a call, and it's tough. So I think it's had an effect on other things.
Talk a little bit about how you know picking up picking a partner. Talk about the partner relationship a little bit.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. That's probably one of my favorite things about EMS. Is finding somebody that you can, and it's one of the most important, if it's right, it's one of the most trusting relationships you can have, because you trust this person with your life, your career, your everything. And I don't know that I have a method. I've had partners that were very different, but you just, you know, with some people you make a connection.
It's okay.
All right. That you make this connection and some people you don't. I think it's mostly about trust for me. You know, it's important to me to be able to say I want to learn from my mistakes. And I think that's a big difference between a paramedic who grows and one who doesn't. You know, everybody makes mistakes, sometimes pretty serious mistakes. And if you can say to somebody, hey, I made this mistake, or this didn't go right, let's talk about this. If I talk to that partner about that and 2 days later I hear it from somebody else, that's just, and in EMS sort of your reputation is really important. So if if you find out from somebody else that, you know, they think you made a mistake, you know, it's very, the people in the business are very unforgiving overall. You know, you crash a truck, you're, they call you crash for 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
You make a mistake and everybody kind of whisper, oh, you made a mistake. But right. So that, for me, the partner that I could trust to the end of the earth was worth gold. I mean, it was like sort of the difference between survival and not.
Yeah. What about the, you know, what about a partner that things didn't go so well, you know, everybody, you know, the guy that filled in for a shift or, you know, what was sort of life on shift like with those partners that were not ideal?
I had one partner that kind of started out okay. And it was female, and I learned out later, or I found out later that what I thought was private was not so much private. And we were probably together another 2 or 3 months after that. It was very, very difficult because you don't know whether you can trust him or not. And yeah, you know, for a day you can deal with stuff. You're always a little more careful when you're dealing with people that you don't deal with every day. But, and once in a while, you know, there's a partner called mystery meat. Like you end up with, sometimes you're on a truck and there's just not another partner there. So you'll end up with a different person every day. And that can be interesting for a little while, but long term, it's very stressful because, and a lot of the partner relationship is you learn to anticipate each other. Mm-hmm. And that's really important when you're doing stuff. When you have a list of 30 really important things you have to do in 10 minutes on a trauma call, say, if your partner can anticipate, if you guys can anticipate what each other are doing, it goes 1,000 times more smoothly than it would if you're with somebody that you don't know. And that can make a really big difference in patient outcomes, I think. Mm-hmm. If you,
what would you say would be like the biggest factor contributing towards, you know, sort of that positive partner relationship? Is it something that you had to seek out actively to work and build with them, or was it just spending more time with the same person?
Yeah, I think it's just learning things about each other. Like I said, the biggest thing was, well, first of all, that you got along sort of on a personal level and that you could trust them, and that takes some time to build up. It's not something you can figure out in a 10-minute interview. And you learn, usually when you have a partner, you've heard things about them before you're together, you know, or you'll find out, oh, you're going to be assigned to Alan in a couple of weeks. So you'll find out what the rest of your work community feels about Alan, and you can kind of go from there. But I would go to a shift I didn't like rather than stay with a partner I didn't like. I mean, you go to, if I ended up on nights for a couple of years, because the partner that I wanted to be with was on nights, and that's where I wanted to be.
So. I'm actually going to back you up a little bit. Talk about kind of sort of the same emotional armor with that shaken baby dealing with the dad. I mean, you know, how are you interacting? There's got to be a lot of emotion mixed up there with the baby, the dad, you know, and
we didn't see the dad at the time. He actually went to court a lot later. And he ended up getting out of it because of some mistakes that didn't have anything to do with us. But yeah, that is emotional. And we didn't know at the time exactly what had happened. He gave us the story about the kid had, you know, fallen out of his hands, or it was kind of a shaky story. But on that call, we didn't really deal with that too much. On other calls, I've had to deal with that kind of stuff. Where I had a guy one time, it was bad call. The guy was in his truck and he hit another car broadside, and he was very, very, very drunk. And we ended up, we put it was an 18-year-old kid and his sister, I think, and her boyfriend, something like that. But we ended up having to transport the drunk guy and the sister in the same ambulance. And the guy was belligerent, horrible, was just awful situation. The sisters and her brother was paralyzed in the accident. Oh, geez. Just really horrible situation. And it's just like, yeah, you got this kind of urge to strangle this guy while you're doing it, but you have to be professional. Okay. But he about, I don't know, a year later, he went to trial for DUI, and the lawyer, he went on and on about his truck. You know, he's in the back with this girl whose brother is on a helicopter going to a trauma center, mm-hmm. and he's crying about his truck. And we got to court, and I guess the guy had told his lawyer that he was very upset about the person being injured, which he wasn't. But the lawyer asked me, well, you know, did he know in the back of the truck what was going on? I said, yeah, he knew. You know, he asked me, and I told him, well, what was his reaction? I said, well, you know, he was a little upset. And he said, well, what did he do after that? And I said, he went back to crying about his truck. And so it kind of got my, and you know, the lawyer was like, oh, I really wish I hadn't asked that question.
Yeah, right.
So I kind of got a dig on that one. But
there you go.
But yeah, it's very frustrating. The alcohol stuff is very frustrating for lots and lots of EMS people.
Yeah.
Very.
It's a tough call.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from emsresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.